Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. Woo! We are excited to have you on with us today. Today we're talking about political and religious extremism with Keisha, and we're going to explore the topic just to get you guys thinking about the notion. It is the political season, and we are thinking about how this kind of thinking gets us trapped and affects our mental health, because giving into fear really does trap us. And what does it do to us, and what do we create from what we're living in? Anyways, we are happy to have you with us today. We are at KRUU-FM, 100.1 on your FM dial, and you are listening to Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. I am the executive and clinical director of the Arden Counseling Center, Arden Community Wellness Center, Restarting Relationships, and a whole host of other things. But the main thing I'd like to remind you of is that to join the Fairfield Mental Health Alliance, if you're so interested. I'm not saying to do it, but if it becomes something you're interested in, contact us and we'll put you in touch with that kind of thing. So, not saying to do things. We're saying explore what works in your life. Good morning, and Keisha.
Good morning.
Tell us about what's happening, or good afternoon or evening, depending on when you're listening.
Yeah, this is going to be broadcast at about 6:30 tonight, so good evening.
6:30 on Tuesdays, and rebroadcast 12:30 on Thursdays, and on the internet, everywhere. We also have a YouTube station from...
Forever. That's every day, 24/7.
That's right.
So... happy day.
Explore the topic with us and why what we're talking about today.
Okay. Well, you know, first of all, I want to thank you, Scott, for inviting me back onto the show. I think that when you asked me to come back and pick a topic, it's so relevant today that we have a lot of extremism in either media or in conversations or on social media, and there's a lot of fear going on. And so I started to think about what are the effects of being extreme in politics and extreme in religion on your psychology and on your mental health. Mm. And, you know, I pulled up these statistics from Google Images that basically displayed a spike in the rise of American extremism in politics and religion. So I thought that this would be a very interesting topic for us to discuss. I'm sure it's been in the forefront before, but when I started to look at some of the statistics, it was interesting that how much the three are tied together.
Hmm.
So.
How so?
Well, I believe the tie-in is fear. You know, I could probably do more extraneous research in it, but...
Well, fear sells, and fear sells and gets somebody elected. The problem is it doesn't actually make you safer. Fear doesn't make you safer. And we could have the whole argument about guns, which I've had many times, which is a really fascinating argument to see from different perspectives once you get over the fear. And then you start going, what does that actually mean? So we could take any of the kind of topics. Where would you like to start?
Well, I guess here we've got, I found this one statistic, and it kind of gave like an outline of who were the most common religious extremism groups. And I'm going to put it in order of extreme to non-extreme. And I'm just going to probably go by the first three. Muslims were the first, of course. Pagan earth-based religions were the second. And Protestants were the third. And these were based upon historical either wars or historical type of...
But even saying that is controversial. And then you go, where does those statistics come from? And where does what does that actually mean in terms of, you know, creating...
These statistics are from the Pew Research Center Forum on Religion and Public Life. And they did a historical analysis on all the wars and what they were based off of. And some of, I guess, the terrorism experiences. And so that's what they based the statistic off of. And so those three were the top three.
And then it becomes, what does that actually mean? Because, for instance, as we know, most Muslims... I just watched a documentary on the Hajj the other night, and it was beautiful and powerful and so moving. And of course, most people aren't into extremism anywhere, but they get swept up by the shouting voices, just like in American politics. People get lost in the shouting voices. It was really interesting in France right now, after the latest shooting, and everybody was living in actual stark terror, because that's what terrorism does, is it jolts the system. But for as many people that were killed, how many more people in France that week probably died from car accidents and from smoking and from drinking and from preventable causes? We live in that trap. And the response to that initially was that the French right wing looked like they were going to take over in the polls. Le Pen's party and the French nationalists looked like they were going to take control, which was really about anti-refugees, anti-Muslim, anti-everybody. Who didn't belong. There's an in and an out. It reminds me of cult mindset.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's an interesting point you bring up. I do data a lot. And so data can be interpreted and sometimes misinterpreted. So I do want to say that when we bring up this statistic on who are the top three that the Pew Research brought up, there are a lot of Protestants, a lot of pagan earth religious groups, and a lot of Muslims that do not participate in extremism of the religion. Those are just the top three within the Pew's research statistics. And so... when you talk about fear and then you bring in statistics, I want to make sure that people are aware that in a systematic approach of fear can affect things like people's interactions with other people based on their perceived religion or their perceived culture. And so I don't want to incite that. But I do just want to, you know, bring up these issues based on the statistics that are there.
But you know, it's fascinating, again, the reaction to that. So to finish the story in France and then to move it over to back to, for instance, the powerful Muslim community, is that in France, it looked like they were going to take over. And France has an interesting kind of electoral process, and it's a two-tier system. And in the first wave, it looked like the French right wing was going to win. And then there was a huge campaign to say, no, we are not going to live in fear. We're not going to go extreme. In fact, we are tolerant and we want things to get better. And in fact, the elections, in fact, turned the other direction, surprisingly. And it's fascinating to then think about, if I'm a Muslim and I am wanting peace, which, of course, almost all Muslims do, it's a beautiful, powerful, amazing religion. How do you react to your own religion, the extremist elements in your religion, be it Christianity, Judaism, or whatever it is? And then... apart from how do you react to the other, so a Protestant group now attacking you as a Muslim, who most of which are peaceful, but has some extremist elements.
Yeah.
Again, fear cuts across all the dimensions here.
Yes, I cannot agree that I am in the know of all the French political. I'm not in the know of all the French political issues that are going on with that, but I do know that there was a conversation that the media informed us that took place within the workforce during one of the terrorism experiences. Mm. And it was in a religious conversation that sparked a lot of, I assume, heated discussions, separation of work relationships, and probably a lack of job functions, you know, because if you're at work talking about religious and political views, you're not really getting work done. So I do want to just put a note out there. I'm not HR or anything, but, you know, when you are among people, some of the best ways to cause a situation that can become extreme is to talk about political and religious views while you're at work or while you're doing something that really maybe you may not know where this other person lies on the scale of their ideas, but just being open to other people's ideals and not feeling like your ideal is the best or the most or should be incorporated by everyone should put us into a more open society of understanding. So I do appreciate that the French are more open in their society. You know, I do appreciate that.
Well, and we become very extremism here. You know, the example I was thinking from the gun debate, which I've had with many people. So one of the exercises I do as a therapist is I look at perspectivism. In couples therapy, for example, we often get lost in the other. The other is doing something to us. And we almost want to allow ourselves to become victimized because that becomes a point of identification. So the triangle is victim, victimizer, and rescuer. And we jump around between these little dimensions when things get really bad in a relationship. What's fascinating is, how can I take the perspective of the other and have understanding? So I will talk to people about being pro-choice or pro-life and taking the other side, and then how can you find common ground? Republican, Democrat, etc. An interesting one is, for instance, the gun debate that I've had with a number of people in terms of looking at this larger perspective. And in the gun debate, you could easily get trapped in one side or the other and lose the possibility of a middle ground. We're broadcasting from the middle of Iowa. I'm a Chicago guy. So I grew up in the city, and to me, I have a very different perspective of guns and what it could mean and what it could do. And so I have a very clear perspective of having a gun means that you are a bad person and you're a gangbanger and you're trying to do something evil. Whereas my wonderful partner, Stephen, would have the almost exact opposite perspective because he comes from a law enforcement perspective and he sees safe gun usage in responsible hands is a way to combat that. We're also in the middle of Iowa. And I've had, for instance, one of my clients was a veterinarian in a farm outside of Springfield where she raises horses. And for her, she gave me the perspective of, if I will have strangers drive to my door. I'm a single woman. I have coyotes and other animals come and attack my horses. But so the use of a gun then is a utilitarian and useful in that perspective. On the other hand, do you need a submachine gun to go hunting? Do you need a machine gun to, protect yourself? And in fact, the statistics show that most often if you have a gun, it will be used against yourself or somebody you know or love far, far, far more than somebody who's a foreigner. Again, the point is not to have the debate, because we could easily get lost in sides of the debate. And I am not saying I am right. Please don't assume that I am right at all. You need to be right. You need to explore for yourself what works for you. We're just opening the topic here on KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial as we're taking a break here for a second and thinking for yourself what works for you on Mental Health Matters, by the way. And we're talking about extremism today.
Yes, I would like to just say that sometimes you just have to agree to disagree. You can listen and hear. I mean, you can take that to any topic. I've been a mom for so many years, and you run into moms that say this is the best way and you should be doing it my way. Mm. And at times you just have to agree to disagree and still be friends. I pulled up this statistic that said impacts of extremism. One of the reasons why I suggest that it's good to agree to disagree and still remain friends, mm-hmm. and still remain within.
And find that compromise position.
Yes, find, you
because
know.
Because the job in, for instance, any relationship is to not agree, but to agree to communicate. Because that's where we come up to critical thinking and thinking about things, not what some biased media. If you only listen to one biased media or the other, you are having skewed perspectives.
Yeah. When you're talking about the psychology of it, you want to maintain positive relationships. And whether that's at work or in school or in our community or within our country, one of the ways I think that would strengthen positive relationships is to agree to disagree and remain communicative. So,
and explore the other perspective. If you don't understand the other perspective, how can you actually have your own opinion? How can you really know what you think and develop that if you don't understand where somebody else is really coming from and why they're coming from that? And it really does affect mental health. This is essential to mental health. Because we could get lost easily in that black and white, good or bad, right or wrong thinking, which traps all of us.
Yeah. So I have here, I'm going to read the impacts of extremisms. First is dispersion and the increase of hatred. Okay. The second is a chaotic situation within different relationship circles that you are in. And the third is deviation from the interest of your everyday life, which could be studying or working or your community life. And so I think those are three parts that make up a person who perhaps is not really agreeing to disagree, or perhaps is not just talking to be talking to other people to learn and to be open to, like Scott said, researching different perspectives. I think that's a person who, if you go through those three, you will basically...
Say those three again.
Those three are, let's back up, dispersion and increase of hatred, a chaotic situation between your circles, so like in your religion, school, community circles, everything will become chaotic
and create alienation.
And then the third is deviation from your interest, like the community, school, relationships.
Well, then one of the main things we look at in mental health diagnosis is it affecting my daily life? Is my extremism, or my belief systems, taking me away from my ability to function and actually live a life? And so if I believe that the world is coming to an end and I'm going to go live in a bunker somewhere and shove my kids in a hole, that's kind of destroying my life.
Yeah.
And that's where we start talking about obsessiveness taking us away.
Yes. Yeah, true. So I thought this would be an interesting topic, and so I'm glad that you were open and having me on the show.
Yeah, it's great, and I want you to come back anytime you want.
Thank you.
I love the thought of like what we can explore together. And again, as you're listening to this, think for yourself what you would like to create. It's not about, you know, what we're saying or not saying. What's important always is what you're allowing yourself to develop into. We're all growing. No one has the answers. So here's another example I think of, unless you want to go for another statistic.
You go for it.
All right. It becomes very easy to live, to accept the what you think of as the societal norms and say, well, that's what everyone else is doing, so that's what's normal or healthy. And it becomes really easy to get trapped in that. So we could talk about political extremism, especially in this country, where some politicians are wanting to ban all Muslims. All Latinos should be sent away somewhere. I'm not sure where they're going, since they are us, since we are them. All LGBTQ, all, you know, African Americans, on and on and on. And we start isolating ourselves and like they are them, and there's an us and a them, again, is always a trap. And it's a trap that we live in our own fears, and those fears propagate themselves and become self-referential.
Yeah, we're all human beings.
That's another way to say it.
I mean, basically, that's what it comes down to. You know, we all have to share this earth, and no matter where you were born, in which country, or born into which religion, or born into whichever community, neighborhood, culture, family, we're all human beings, and we just all need to be respectful and maintain relations. I mean, relations are the foundation of community and your job and systems that work that keep. They keep us going.
And keep us growing.
Yeah.
But, you know, speak for yourself as being a human being. I don't really identify with humanness. I'm sorry. I'm from an alien planet. I'm not sure where I'm from.
We welcome aliens, too.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's good. It's good.
So.
And I noticed, for instance, you're in a different body than mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have a different color to your skin and hair.
Everything.
Different everything.
You've I'm unique in my own family.
Yeah, you know, exactly. So, yeah. And that's okay. What's amazing is this exploration of what we can create together. So here is this other example. If I was in a society which said that men should be on top and women should be beneath me, okay? And I am going to be an extremist and say I believe in this patriarchal system. Women are here to serve men, and they should be taught that they're only here to get married and have children, and I don't know what else.
Be in the kitchen.
Be in the kitchen. Oh, yes. I've heard of that. There's a kitchen thing in most houses. I'm not quite sure what that room does. So let's say I accept that as the truth, in quotes, like that is reality. Okay. And let's say I'm a guy and I say, hey, that's a pretty good thing. I get to be on top. Right.
And then you get to work and your boss is a woman.
Well, not only that. Okay. No. I'm in a society where the women are, you know, behind a mask, or they're walk 10 steps behind me, or I just come from a system which says power structures. And it doesn't matter if it's the glass ceiling, which isn't so glass-like, because I can't really even see above it, right? So whatever it is, the question I have is, as a therapist, what does that do to me as a man?
I think it actually builds trauma.
It does. It builds that fear in me because there is an us and a them, and there is never a partnership. So who do I have partnership? When am I allowed to feel and be human and grow And actually, you know, real men do cry. Real men actually have feelings. Real men are actually alive and not dying of depression that they've suppressed inside themselves so nobody even knows it exists and they're just die, you know? Hey, I hit 65. I made it. Congratulations. Now I can die. You know, what does it do to me? Forget about, you know, what does it do to a woman to have to live in a, as a victim or in a subversive manner? What happens to partnership? So I'm not saying traditional societies don't work. I'm saying there's something fundamental about living in the fear of that structure.
Well, you know, my background is in science. And in science, we learn that there's so many rules and so many laws, and then everything gets broken. And it still functions completely great. So I think when we start to think of society with those type of rules and functions, we start to then think about, what about men who are born who are very feminine, who are transgender? And then what about the women who are transgendered into men? And so then you become to have blurred lines. And then those laws and rules become obsolete because you have so many exceptions. And then you have people who are just excelling, whether they were born female or transgendered into female. And so people who are holding on to those old laws or thinking that those laws can't be broken and those differences can't be great are outdated.
Well, okay, so let's say I come from a society that says this is a choice, and I come from a mindset that is a choice to be gay or lesbian or transgender or anything. And I'm going to deny all biology. I'm going to deny. And if somebody is a deviant, quote, in my world, right, and they should be stoned to death, again, what happens to me to have to be that guy who's suppressing people? What does it have to be to me to not have feelings and to sit there and go, what happens to my humanity? What happens if I happen to be, I'm sorry, genetically predisposed to be, let's say, in my position, gay? What is that? How do I connect to me, let alone to the other? And so the exclusiveness, my belief systems, when my belief systems become impose upon my ability to actually live and be human, that's when I'm saying there's an issue.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I want to take it back to mommyhood because I have so many examples of mommyhood that I nurse both my sons. My sons are 10 years apart, so there's a decade of new information that came out. And whether you were for or against nursing, when I nursed, whether it was in public or whether it was at home, I got a flurry of different attitudes. Really? From the gamut of, why are you doing that, to the gamut of, oh, you're doing the best thing for your child. And so I seriously experienced that. There were people who felt like,
having never nursed, people who are listening, I happen to not be of that gender, so I've never nursed. But
so
I'm astounded if you think about any basic of science. Are people coming from folklore?
I think that people try to control people with their ideology. So I think that when you bring up things like people telling them that it's a choice or it's not a choice or they were born with it or not born with it and trying to put their ideology on other people to change their lives, I think that it's a control thing. And who gives you the right to control someone else's life? I think that you should let people just be free. We're in a free country. Let them be free to choose and make decisions whether they want to nurse or not nurse. I think I'm so mad about that.
Yeah, I can hear that. Well, thank you so much, and be free to be who you are.
Exactly.
Wherever you are listening to this, be who you need to be. Create the world that you need to create for yourself today, this very day. Who are you creating yourself to be now? Thank you, everyone, for joining us on Mental Health Matters, and we look forward to talking to you again soon. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.